Hi, I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Hello and welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing. It's May the 6th, 2021. I'm Raoul Woodliff, and I'm joined today by our founding editor, David Horovitz, and our senior analyst, Chaviv Retigor. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Hey, Raoul.
Hey, Raoul.
We are 6 days into Operation Guardian of the Walls, and we've seen hundreds, almost thousands of rockets fired from Gaza towards Israel. We've seen hundreds, perhaps thousands of Israeli sorties and airstrikes on Hamas and terror targets in the Gaza Strip. David, tell us, over the last 24 hours, where are things standing at the moment? What's the latest developments?
Look, I think the big picture is that Hamas really won this in terms of strategic advantage and its goals from the get-go. And since then, and this is maybe atypical, the longer it goes on, it's a case of Israel actually genuinely now trying to weaken Hamas at a practical level. And what I mean by all of that is the initial barrage of rockets towards Jerusalem last Monday afternoon was all Hamas needed to do to begin what is its effort to marginalize and displace the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, and set itself as the champion of Jerusalem. Since then, it's basically widened, I think, its big picture gains. You know, it definitely has further marginalized the PA. It has prompted a little bit of rocket fire in Israel from Lebanon and Syria, and I don't know if that's going to develop, and I certainly hope not. It has radically stirred up or helped exacerbate tensions, certainly, between Jews and Arabs in Israel. And again, I hope that is starting to calm, but I'm not sure. And in the last couple of days, it's got some mobilization in the West Bank as well, after a few days of relative calm. All of these are very, very useful, Hamas, whenever this comes to an end. And I think as the days have gone by, what you're seeing from an Israeli perspective is Israel actually trying to ensure that if next rounds come, it will be a weakened Hamas. And it's not clear to me how well Israel's doing in that respect. There have been some apparent successes. Overnight, Thursday, Friday, Israel bombarded this network of tunnels within Gaza, where Hamas stores some of its weaponry, at least lots of its weaponry, and where Hamas was waiting or would have been waiting to confront Israeli troops in a ground offensive, were that to have been ordered. Now, the initial assertion or belief or hope, I think at least, was that thinking that Israel was about to stage a ground offensive, Hamas gunmen were in the tunnels and many of them were killed. It's not clear yet, and we're trying to still establish how successful or not that was. Israel is plainly targeting a great deal of other Hamas infrastructure. Very, very difficult challenge, I think. I do think the Israeli Air Force is pretty competent. I think Israeli intelligence is extraordinarily strong. So that's all playing out now. None of which is really the answer to the question that you've asked in terms of the ordinary public. From an Israeli perspective, this has been a very, very wearying and difficult few days, obviously. And you know, you know that. I think you're conducting this podcast from your bomb shelter, right?
Yeah, indeed.
But it's striking, you know, for all that we're feeling ourselves to be under fire, and we are under fire, and I think, you know, we're close to 2,000 projectiles fired at Israel. It seems callous to talk of a death toll of only about 10 Israelis, I think is the number at the moment. But that's an astonishing thing. I mean, it should be zero, and none of this should be happening. And just to remind people listening, since some people seem to have trouble with understanding the rights and wrongs of this, Israel is not in Gaza. It has no troops in Gaza. It has no civilians in Gaza. It pulled back to the pre-67 line from Gaza in 2005. There would be no suffering in Gaza were it not for the fact that Hamas runs Gaza and keeps trying to eliminate Israel. So I just want to stress that Israel is under fire. What the last point that I just want to reiterate, that, you know, this, you know, it sounds callous, but after 2,000 rockets, 10 dead, which is 10 terrible deaths too many, nonetheless, is, you know, it's an astoundingly low figure given the horrors that this enemy is trying to inflict upon us.
Now, David, you mentioned that perhaps Hamas in the very opening hours of this violence achieved some of their goals, or perhaps their overall goal. Chaviv, what are Israel's goals? We're seeing a pushback against potential efforts to bring about a ceasefire. What does Israel hope to achieve?
I think Israel has tried to avoid a ceasefire ever since Tuesday, right? Day two of the fighting, when Ismail Haniyeh of Hamas, the political chief of Hamas, declared victory, which is a funny thing to do on day two. And we've seen just literally every single day an example of Hamas asking for a ceasefire, whether quietly to the Russians, quietly to the Egyptians, passing on all kinds of messages. And it's exactly as David said. At the beginning, Hamas achieved a political victory. It showed it had the guts to, launch these very large barrages on Israel's commercial and demographic heartland and center. But ever since then, Hamas is now dragging Gaza through ever-increasing suffering. Its own organization has taken, a beating. And I agree with David, it's not clear to me how big of a beating, but nevertheless, more than had been destroyed on Tuesday, right? We're now on Sunday. And so the costs are only rising. Now, Israel doesn't want to give Hamas the quiet that Hamas wanted after the first barrages, for the very obvious reason that it wants to exact a cost that will prevent the next barrages. We have had, over the last decade, important to understand, the quietest period of Israel's history, the lowest death toll among Israeli soldiers and civilians in the history of the country. And Israeli strategic planners and political leaders think that that's because Israel has deterred its enemies, where there are a lot of these, tit-for-tat kinds of small-scale conflicts. 2014 wasn't small for Gaza. It wasn't small in the Israeli experience. But if 2014 is the sum total of the war, of the significant fighting of that decade, that is small in the history of Israel. And so deterrence works. The Israeli response to the Hezbollah attack in 2006 across the border, which was a month of bombings and massive degradation of Hezbollah's capabilities in 2006, gave us 15 years of quiet. So Israel's thinking now is exactly that. We have to exact from Hamas a cost that will make Hamas understand that we need a few years of quiet until the deterrence fades, and then we go through this again. It's a simple strategy. It's a simple need that Israel sees in this conflict.
Now, among Israel's aims are taking out specific Hamas targets, and one of the perhaps controversial incidents over the last few days has been a strike on the Al Jala building in central Gaza City, which Israel says hid military assets used by the intelligence wing of the Hamas terror group. In addition to that, the building housed the offices of the Associated Press, Al Jazeera, and other media outlets. We're seeing lots of chatter on social media about whether Israel has to potentially provide proof of Hamas using its building. AP have come out with a strong statement saying they don't believe Hamas were using the building. David, tell us about this incident and some of the controversy surrounding it.
It is controversial when the Israeli Air Force demolishes a building in which foreign press or genuine media have their offices. It's going to cause an outcry. We should stress that warning was given, that the occupants of the building were told that the army was going to demolish it. In the AP statement expressing, I think, shock and horror in the original statement, they did say that they were given warning ahead of time and they were able to take their journalists out of the building. But the way they put it, it was quite a near thing. They just about got their people out of the building. And, it takes us to the one of the complexities of this kind of the reality that Israel faces against Hamas in Gaza. And it's been like this for years. And there will be people listening to this broadcast who think that the Israelis are the terrible brutes of this round of conflict. And there will be people listening to this broadcast who think that the Israelis are showing immense moral concern in trying to stop a terror group that's trying to eliminate this country while seeking to minimize the harm to the civilians among whom this terror group is deployed and emplaced. Over the years, and we've had so many of these conflicts, unfortunately, this has been an abiding issue. What is incumbent upon Israel to show the world about what it's doing in the territory of the enemy? So when, the most cursory look, when you see the death tolls, the relative death tolls, and there's, like I say, there's 10 dead in Israel, and there's somewhere in the region of 150 dead in Gaza, and I'm not sure how accurate those numbers are. In past conflicts, that there have been, again, this huge imbalance of the dead, to put it really crudely. And therefore, for whatever reason, if you are interested in people understanding this conflict, you want to know exactly what's going on. Who are the people who've been killed in Gaza? Are they overwhelmingly members of the terrorist organizations? How many of them are genuinely civilians? Who was killed by Israeli fire and who lost their lives because Hamas rockets fell short or because something exploded when terrorists were planning to fire it at Israel? My belief has always been that the more that Israel can explain to the world about what's going on the other side, the better, because the other side can be relied upon to distort it. But it's really complicated. And, Israel is trying trying to defend itself and trying to defang an enemy. And I don't know how much resources would need to be deployed to trying to work out what's going on the other side. But I think when you come to something like this tower, the more that the Israeli military is able to tell, by the way, Israelis too, we want to know what's being done on our behalf, and we want to be comfortable that it is moral and decent. It's also essential for Israel internationally. It's essential for the diplomatic room for maneuver to enable the Israeli army to do what the political echelon deems is necessary to weaken this enemy. So I don't think it's, you know, I don't know about the practical obligations under any kind of legal framework, but from every sensible point of view, it seems to me, the more that the Israeli military is able to tell everybody that it can safely tell of what it knows Hamas was up to in this building. I mean, if I was the AP bureau chief in Gaza, I'd want to know, what is it that Israel says Hamas was up to? As a journalist, I want to know. As an Israeli, I want to know. And as a supporter of Israel, or somebody who didn't know what to make of this conflict around the world, I would want to know. And therefore, I think the more that we are able to find out, by the way, at the Times of Israel with our reporters, which we will try to, but the more that the Israeli officialdom, military officialdom can say, I think the better.
Now, we're seeing numerous international responses from around the world. We're seeing protests in many European cities over the weekend. Additionally, over the weekend, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke with US President Joe Biden, who also spoke with Palestinian Authority leader Mahmoud Abbas. It appears that the US, to some extent, has been missing in action over the past week. We don't have a US ambassador in Israel yet. Biden now puts out these phone calls to Israeli leaders and Palestinian leaders, although not necessarily someone who has any say in Gaza. Chaviv, what's the US trying to achieve, and does it have a role at this stage?
That's a great question. I think we've seen that the United States has been desperate to avoid getting into this region, getting into this conflict, at least at the beginning, at least at the early stages. It doesn't want to engage on the Palestinians, while it is advancing, of course, with returning the US to the Iran nuclear deal. And so maybe they're trying to win the first round before starting any second round on the Palestinians. Maybe that's a sense of what's possible within Israeli politics. There has been a lot of talk about, I think, the Biden administration staying out of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And of course, that was possible while the status quo reigned. And once the rocket fire begins and once the real fighting begins, that's no longer possible. And exactly like you said, you know, the United States' ability to function here has been a little bit limited by the fact that it doesn't have an ambassador to Israel appointed yet. And it also doesn't have what is essentially the ambassador to the Palestinians, the consulate head of the section of Palestinian affairs at the consulate in Jerusalem, or whatever the position is called. So they don't actually have that direct ability to interact at a high level, at the level of an ambassador representing a president. And so the Biden administration on Friday sent Hadi Amer, who's in charge in the White House of the Israel-Palestine portfolio, peace talks, conflict, what have you. This senior advisor to the president of the United States on the Israeli-Palestinian issue is now in Israel, and about an hour ago met with Israel's defense minister, Benny Gantz, to discuss de-escalation in Gaza. So I think that what we saw up until now for the first week, which was just backing Israel, you know, calling for de-escalation very politely. Lloyd Austin, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, spoke with Benny Gantz last night and said, you know, there are terror groups in Gaza and we support you, and just vaguely calling for de-escalation. I think we're going to start seeing this week a much more serious statement of, you know, the Biden administration really wanting this essentially taken off the table by an end to the fighting. I have to say that at 11 o'clock, which is 51 minutes ago as we record, the Israeli Security Cabinet began its meeting to discuss. This is the committee of ministers that has the power to make decisions on war by law. And they discussing the next steps in Gaza. And some ministers have quietly informed reporters that they're going to be calling for the beginning of the de-escalation in the cabinet meeting, because they have a sense that our allies have backed us very, very strongly until now, from Europe, from the United States, you know, as much as we could have hoped for. And now let's not stretch that too far. You know, if the army needs a day or two to give the last real, you know, pounding to Hamas's infrastructure here or there, fine, but we need to start de-escalating. Now, I don't know that that's Benny Gantz's view or Netanyahu's view. Those are the key voices. But I know that some of the 10 members of that committee are going to be saying that, and the American presence and beginning to enter this issue very seriously with senior people coming to Israel, I think is beginning to have that effect.
Raul, let me just ask you, as we end this, what's it been like for you? I've not had a directly arduous time under rocket attack because I'm in Jerusalem. You're not in Jerusalem. You don't need to tell us exactly where you are, but you've spent a lot of time with lots of little kids in your bomb shelter, right?
Indeed, this week, I think 4 of the last 5 nights we've been in the bomb shelter at some point. At some point, we moved all the 3 kids into the bomb shelter just to reduce the stress for them. And last night, there was not a siren where we were, but I read this morning that a rocket was fired towards my city of Modi'in and landed somewhere else. From about midnight to 12:30 last night, we heard just a constant racket of booms in the sky overhead as rockets were fired from Gaza to Tel Aviv, and the Iron Dome intercepted the majority of those rockets. What I'm experiencing is what millions of Israelis are experiencing across the country, and what many Israelis have been experiencing, not just for this period, but for the last 12, 15, 20 years.
I just want to add to that, we are in the Jerusalem area outside of the range of outside of the targeting of Hamas by these rockets mostly. But on my street, there's probably been a population growth of about 40% over the last week, because many, many, many people are hosting family and friends who are in the rocket range. And in my house, I am working from my wife's home office, because my home office is now where my brother-in-law and his fiance, who live in Ofakim down south, are staying with us. So the experience has spread. So many Israelis are under fire, like you, and also those who aren't are hosting those trying to get away. And I don't think there's an Israeli family not touched by the experience.
I want to say this very delicately. I am not without sympathy for the people of Gaza under the assault that the Israeli Air Force is trying to deliver against Hamas. Those people in Gaza who are part of Hamas's goal of wiping out my country have considerably less sympathy from me. But innocent people caught up in this on all sides have my sympathy. I just want to stress again, Israel left Gaza. Israel has no claims to Gaza. And if an evil terrorist organization hadn't taken over Gaza, there was no reason why Gaza couldn't have thrived and encouraged people to believe that some kind of coexistence was possible. And, you know, I don't know if that's a really, really bleak note or a potential source of how things could get better. But, you know, we should stress that.
Absolutely. And we won't be recording an episode of the podcast tomorrow, which is the Shavuot festival. So when we come back in 2 days, who knows what the developments will be. We'll, of course, be updating then. In the meantime, tomorrow, we will be pretending that current events don't exist, and we'll be airing an episode where members of staff talk about what's on their festive table on Shavuot. Thank you both for joining me today, and we'll be back in a couple of days.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. A special thanks to our producer, Raul Woodliff. I'm Amanda Borshaldan.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And on our mothership, thetimesofisrael.com.